Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Soa. Thanks for joining me. Starting off a brand new week and getting close to the end of our first month in 2018. It has been an extraordinary month by any reasonable standard. And I think that I don't think too many people should be surprised that we did get a bit of a pullback today in today's market. We are in the middle of earnings season, and I think ultimately when people speculate about, you know, what's going to happen with earnings and the guidance going forward for a number of different companies, you know, when the numbers of market's been running up as much as it has, 6 or 7% so far this year, and you're continuing through the earnings process, I mean, it's almost like they're looking for a reason to have a pullback. Now, again, I mentioned it over and over and over again, but and I apologize for those of you who are regular listeners who hear this, but you know, we do, the folks here at the radio station and, of course, the experts on the media tell me, constantly remind me that each and every show that we do, you're going to have a surprisingly large number of individuals who may or may not have heard the show before. So we have to at least think of them as well and not simply assume that everybody has heard everything and all the opinions that I've offered in the last 27 years here on the Money Talk program. But starting out year number 28, we still have to be sensitive to who our listeners are, trying to provide information and opinions and a little education, but doing so in a manner that's consistent with who the listeners are. And more importantly, the things that you care about, things that you're interested in. So, yes, we do, in fact, talk an awful lot about the direction of the markets and also point out that despite the fact that the market has seemingly, like it seems like every day it's reaching some all-time high, unless you have a bit of a pullback, but you know, just to understand when you hear terms like bear market and correction and pullback, the word bear market, again, is a decline of 20% from the high. A correction is a decline of 10% from the high. And a pullback is anything in between. You could pull back 1 or 2%. We've had a number of years here where we've had, you know, pretty sizable, anywhere between 7 and 10% return overall by year end. But during the course of the year, had a couple of pullbacks where the market may have actually pulled back 3 or 4% in between. The question you have to ask yourself when those things occur is, how will you react to it? Dealing with pullbacks, especially pullbacks, because they can happen even in the best of years. Will you be driven by the wisdom or perhaps the logic, you think, or the fundamentals of the economy and the market and remain invested properly? And I say properly because each and every one of you may be, have a different version of what is a proper investment plan for you. My rule of thumb has been pretty simple. Be reasonable. In other words, don't set goals for yourself that are unrealistic. Don't shoot for the moon. Yes, the normal for the stock market going back in history, going back what is getting very close to 100 years. I mean, we're in the early 20s we've had reasonably accurate information, historic information. But very soon it'll be 100 years. And when we get to about 2027, we'll be saying back, well, for the last century, we've had these numbers. Well, in the last almost a century, we've been looking in an environment where 10% average return in the stock market, good years and not years, notwithstanding. Because when I say an average, I'm looking usually at putting them in blocks of 10 years, 10-year rolling periods. If you look at most average 10-year periods, and I'll go decade to decade, so 2000 to say 2009 or 2010 through 2019, if you look at those types of numbers, with you might have a couple of really lousy years in there too, or just mediocre years. But you'll also have good ones. And when you average them all out, they would come to historically about 10%. Recently, we've seen some adjustments to those numbers. But when the period precedes a major bear market like we had in 2008, the period that is followed from there, from 2009 through where we are now, may be greater than those shorter term averages. But if you're structuring a portfolio that works along the assumption, again, not the guarantee, but the assumption that the market may offer you a 5.5% to 6.5% return, and I say again, the market may be being the stock market. If you are in a properly diversified portfolio, which means you don't have all of your eggs in one basket, and the money is allocated in a way that the sectors that your holdings represent are not directly correlated with each other. Correlated meaning that they're not going to perform in exactly the same way under the same conditions. So non-correlated. So if I say we're not highly correlated to the stock market, it means that whatever direction stocks go in, you have holdings that are not going to move in the same direction as stocks do. And there's been times in history where sectors like the bond market would perform very differently than the stock market. We've even seen times when the bonds would go up when stocks were going down. The same could be true for certain types of commodities. Like even precious metals like gold and silver don't always react the same way as the stock market does, even though they are considered equities, in other words, ownership interest in something. A bond is a debt instrument. A bond represents someone loaning money. So a corporation issues a bond. You are buying that bond, but technically you're loaning your money. Let's say it's a $10,000 bond. You're loaning your money to that corporation or to that state or to that government, the U.S. government in the case of a U.S. Treasury. And if it's a 10-year Treasury, they're going to be paying you out an annual dividend. So I've always equated that for understanding purposes as a rent. They're paying you rent on the money. You're loaning them your $10,000. They're paying you rent on the money, somewhere in the range of, say, 2.6%, and they'll pay that to you quarterly, 1/4 of it quarterly. And then at the end of the 10 years, they will give you your $10,000 back. So ideally, if you hold the money, you hold that bond for the entire 10 years, based on the full faith and credit of the United States government, which is a pretty highly rated creditor, you're going to be assured pretty much of getting your $10,000 back. And while they are holding and using your $10,000, they are paying you rent. So you're getting whatever the prevailing rate is at the time. Now, granted, there's complexities in that, and that depends a lot on the direction of interest rates and a few other factors. But people will buy bonds in a portfolio very simply to offset the level of risk they're carrying by having stocks in their portfolio. Now, again, no guarantees to this discussion. But historically, over time, stocks will typically, yes, carry more risk, but will typically outperform bonds over time. In the short term, stocks are typically riskier than bonds. Over time, an extended period of time, the risk is diffused because you're averaging out the risk over periods of time. And again, the history of the stock market is more favorable as a total return instrument than typically bonds would be. But again, they are purchased for different reasons. And many people will actually purchase bonds not to get necessarily a source of income as an investor, but to add a stabilizing factor to your overall portfolio. Well, today, stocks ended sharply lower as a jump in sovereign interest rates gave some traders some pause. The Dow lost, as you heard during the beginning of the show, nearly 180 points. The S&P shed about 0.67%, and the NASDAQ was down 0.52. The benchmark 10-year yield I mentioned broke above 10.7% to reach its highest level since April of 2014. So we get some fears of maybe higher inflation are perhaps sparking the sharp rise in bond rates this year. It's not just interest rates that continue to rise. Inflation expectations are rising with them. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to take a quick break here on the Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa. You're listening to AM 790, and this is Money Talk. I'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Eric was way behind on his taxes.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS, almost $15,000. I tried to make payments.
The IRS wasn't satisfied with Eric's efforts, so they came after him full force.
They're coming to put a lien and a hold on all my income, my home, my car. I was just overwhelmed at what to do.
Then Eric called Optima Tax Relief.
When Optima Tax got involved, the calls would stop, the threats would stop. It was easy, like, 1, 2, 3.
Optima Tax Relief is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, and their team of expert tax professionals took care of Eric's problem.
I owe $15,000, and now my debt is clean. I don't owe anything.
Take Eric's advice.
If you have a tax problem, you need to call Optima Tax now.
Call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
We are there, day one, with baby names and a gift that lasts a lifetime. We are there, as you grow, protecting you and those you love. And we are there, as you start your next chapter. We are with you through life's journey. We are Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. Get to know us at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
By washing your hands, you can prevent infections and avoid the need for antibiotics. Have a cold, flu, or a runny nose? You can feel better without antibiotics. Ask your healthcare professional about the best way to feel better while your body fights off the virus. Be antibiotics aware. Visit health.ri.gov/antibiotics. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Department of Health and the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa. You're listening to AM 790, and we appreciate you giving us a chance to chat with you during your drive time home. If you've got a question for me, if it's one that you can't get on the phone to talk because you're not in a great position to do so, like driving on the highway, but you have a real quick one, just call 437-5000. Maya's here. She'll take your question, she'll plug it into my screen, and she will make sure that I address your question before you reach your destination. Or if you're sitting someplace comfortable and it's safe and you can chat and you do have a question that may require a follow-up, try the same number, 437-5000. Just let Maya know that you are in a safe place, and she'll make sure I know, and we'll get you on the air as soon as we can. Now, if you're outside the immediate area, the toll-free number is 888-345-0790. That's 888-345-0790. We're kind of suggesting talking a little bit about today's market pullback. Obviously, the biggest pullback of the month of January, but probably irrelevant because as we get to the end of this month, the market, I think as months go, it'll be one of the bigger single months we've seen in a long time, certainly one of the bigger Januaries we've seen in a long time. We mentioned that it's not just the issue of interest rates that continue to rise. Inflation accompanies that. Expectations are rising with that. He also, and we're talking to Peter Buchvar, we're reading an article by him today, and he was suggesting, he's an investment officer, chief investment officer with the Bleakley Advisory Group. He also said that 2.8% is the next key level to watch on the 10-year Treasury. Right now, it actually did hit 10.7, which was a meaningful number. The Federal Reserve's preferred inflation measure. You've heard lots of different measures that are out there, consumer price index, that sort of thing. Well, the personal consumption expenditures price index, the PCE, what that does is excludes food and energy, I know that sounds really weird to exclude food and energy because it's among the things that most consumers do, in fact, spend a lot of money on. But the reason they do that is because it's food and energy is the least, most volatile numbers, the least dependable numbers. They want to use elements of consumption, personal consumption by the consumer that are relatively stable and can be measured. I guess that's the big issue. Again, I think you miss and lose something by excluding food and energy. But if you include the food and energy, then you have to reduce the time frame that you're judging to a much shorter, maybe less effective or efficient time frame. But anyway, the PCE rose 0.2% in December. The so-called core PCE that I was mentioning did increase 1.5% for the last 12 months through this last month. So that would be really January through January. The CBOE, Volatility Index, the VIX, V-I-X, widely considered one of the best gauges we have of concern, anxiety, or fear in the market, it rose about 13.2% or 1.46 as a number, up to 15.54. Now, stocks closed at record highs this past Friday, with the Dow surging more than 200 points in one day, while the S&P 500 and NASDAQ climbed more than 1% each during the day on Friday. Technology was one of the best performing sectors on Friday after Intel reported strong quarterly results. See, that's one of the things that's affecting us now here in the beginning of the year as we get closer to the end of the month. We're sort of getting revised, updated numbers from last year as we're trying to gauge how well 2017 turned out overall on a lot of different levels. Yes, there's always some numbers that are reported early up front, but sometimes they're not as dependable as we'd like them to be. As we start to get revised numbers, those revised numbers reflect factors that take a little longer to calculate, actually included in the analyses. So, yes, we do depend on the revisions as we go. But anyway, at this time, we're also looking at some of those early numbers, which are going to be corporate earnings from especially the S&P 500. And we're probably midway through earnings season, shall we say, looking specifically at how things did in the fourth quarter of last year. Last week reinforced that technology remains a critically important sector for investors and for the market. And tech must remain stable if the stock market can rally in the short term and continue to move higher. That's according to the folks over at the Sevens report. They said in their note to investors, we saw that in the price action last week, we saw that in the whole week's gains came on Monday and Friday. Now, equities or stocks were also boosted last week by stronger than expected quarterly results, as I was mentioning, from some of the major companies that have already announced their numbers. So far, the corporate earnings season has been very strong. Of the S&P 500 companies that have actually already reported as of today, or as of this morning anyway, 78% have reported surpassing their bottom line number, bottom line being net profit after expenses and efficiencies and whatever. In other words, what did you actually earn ultimately? While 77% have actually beaten their revenue or top line numbers. That's a big deal because that tells you whether the products and services offered by a corporation are generating new revenue coming in, a lot more demand for the products and services. That's a slightly better, you know, long-term guideline for investors, a gauge, one of the indicators that we look to. Top-line numbers are critically important. Now, bottom-line reflects efficiency often within a company. Not to say that that's not critically important, but that could also reflect maybe reducing payroll, which could be reducing staff, which is not a good thing. If they're doing it for reasons of efficiencies, it's fine for shareholders, not necessarily for the future of the company. But again, we have to look through all these things. But we put everything into consideration, the bottom line numbers and the top line numbers together to determine whether things are going well within the market. Today, Boeing, McDonald's, Apple, Chevron, Facebook are among the companies scheduled to report later this week. Elsewhere, in corporate news, K-Cup, maker of Keurig, you know, the coffee companies, announced that it will buy Dr. Pepper Snapple. Keurig said that Snapple shareholders will receive $103.75 per share in a special cash dividend and keep 13% of the new company. Dr. Pepper Snapple jumped about 29% on Monday. Now, that's not unusual. Remember, Dr. Pepper Snapple is being purchased by K-Cup or Keurig. the company that is being bought oftentimes is being bought at a premium, so the people that own the shares of the company being bought usually get some sort of a benefit as a result. They see the value of their shares go up, while the company doing the buying is obviously going to do it for a reason, and they do believe that the new company will be accretive to earnings. In other words, help them increase their earnings in the future, help them perhaps enter into some new markets that they've been looking to gauge. But because they are the buyer, they're usually expending money, paying cash, or maybe even taking out some sort of debt in some cases in order to acquire the company. So it's not unusual to see, in this case, K-Cup or Keurig, see their share price drop a bit, while the share price of Snapple could see itself going up, which is kind of cool, interesting. But you know, people often ask, why does one party's stocks change, stock price change, when the other one does not, and what's the reasoning behind it? Now, we're coming to the end of this month, January, the first month of 2018. A lot of people have been asking the question, even last year, and as we during the course of this month, whether or not, well, even in December, people were asking this show whether we thought that the rather extraordinary performance of the stock market during 2017, whether there was sufficient momentum in the economy and the market to drive prices higher in 2018. And we tried to warn people that, okay, 2017 obviously is not a new normal. It's perhaps best described as an aberration or an anomaly. That you're not going to necessarily get the continued types of numbers that we're looking at there, you know, high in the teens or higher. But, you know, there are some factors behind it. And some of the fundamental issues that are basically part of the economy, more so than just the stock market, economic conditions continue to move higher. The full impact of the tax cuts, the tax bill that was written into law at the end of the year, that also potentially, may have some continued advantage moving forward. The big question will be: is did the market, as part of the fourth quarter of last year, did the market build into the prices of the stock market ultimately the benefits of potential tax cuts? The problem, I think, with that statement is that the economists and market strategists don't really actually know the answer. They try to pretend they do. They try to give answers of some sort to the people in the media, because the media is pushing them for some sort of an analysis, and certainly investors want to hear what the opinions are of all the so-called experts. But I mean, ultimately, in the end, it takes an awful lot of information. But more importantly, because so much of what happens to the stock market is driven by emotion, it's driven by how you feel about yourself and what you own and what you hold. Let's face it, you and I, we're all speculating about what 2018 will look like, and if there are key sectors of the economy that will benefit from the direction this economy is going in. We don't know what other things will happen in Washington. So now, for the first time in a long time, we're dealing with what we call fiscal stimulus, not just monetary. The Federal Reserve is also going to be acting potentially more and more, affecting markets as we move through this year. The Federal Reserve has driven the market literally since 2009. Whether or not that's going to continue here as we move into 2018, it's hard to say. I think the Fed, by its nature, may be doing the opposite of what it has done over the last several years, where we looked like we had accommodative policies, and the Fed was bringing the cost of money down by dropping interest rates and purchasing bonds in the open market. Well, now they get $4 trillion of bonds on their balance sheet that they want to probably unwind those positions. So that could push interest rates higher. That could have them actually raising the rates of certain things like the Fed fund rate and the discount rate. These are things that could push the cost of money higher. They wouldn't want to do that in an environment where they thought it could hurt the economy, or the economy was not weak, strong enough to handle it. I think if they're doing that now, they probably believe it's strong enough to handle it. We do have a new Fed chairman coming into play, though, as Janet Yellen retires. So although many people believe the new chairman, Powell, is going to have a very similar policy bent to Janet Yellen, we'll have to wait and see there. So there's a lot of unsettled, uncertain pieces of information that could affect markets. But anyway, in the second half of tonight's program, we're going to talk about the very fact that we've had a very, very strong, in answer to part of the question, a very strong January to begin 2018. The question will be, is what happens historically? when you've had a great start to the year? And what will the rest of the year look like, at least based upon trends we've seen from the past? Although those trends can't guarantee future performance. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program. We'll be right back.
Gets it to Okolie. Oak, two on the shot clock. He's going to have to fire it inside mid-court. It's the three!
Count it.
This is Mike Martin, Brown Bears men's basketball coach in class of 2004. I would like to invite you all to the Pizzatola Center this season to see our exciting young team compete against our Ivy League rivals. Join us as we take on Columbia Saturday, February 10th at 6 p.m.
Hunsaker, shot at the buzzer. Yeah! Bears win it!
Brown versus Columbia, presented by Mohegan Sun. Visit brownbears.com for game and ticket information.
Start the fun. Start the excitement. It's the Northeast International Auto Show
at the Rhode Island Convention Center, Friday, February 9th through the 11th.
Start your imagination.
Check out over 250 of the hottest new cars, new trucks, and SUVs.
Come see the ultra-exotic car collection,
courtesy of the Audrain Automobile Museum. These are some of the coolest cars on the planet. See pre-production models.
And it's all displayed in a non-selling environment.
You can even test drive vehicles from Toyota, Chrysler, Dodge, Fiat, Jeep, and Ram truck. And every day is family day. All kids 12 and under get in free. Every attendee gets a free 12-month subscription to Motor Trend.
The Northeast International Auto Show is where the excitement starts.
The 9th through the 11th at the Rhode Island Convention Center. Go to ProvidenceAutoShow.com for discounts. This auto show is presented by the Rhode Island Automobile Dealers Association and is produced by Motor Trend, so you know it's going to be good. Come for the cars, stay for the fun.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. Every Army National Guard member serves not only to protect the nation, but also their local communities, so they each have a stake in the security and well-being of the neighborhoods where they live and work. They are your next-door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. Since the early days of our republic, the Army National Guard has continued its timeless commitment to guarantee peace and security for all Americans, a proud legacy which has endured for nearly four centuries. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, for community, and for country. Selfless service, it's what inspires the men and women of the Army National Guard to be part of something greater than themselves. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
I was recently laid off. Bills started to pile up and we had to make a tough choice. Heat or eat?
For years, the Good Neighbor Energy Fund has responded by providing energy assistance to local households.
Thanks to the fund, my family got through a tough time.
If your household is having trouble paying the heating bills, please contact a CAP agency, call United Way 211, or visit RhodeIslandGoodNeighbor.org. Ad sponsored by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you to the second half of tonight's program. I mentioned in the first half, yes, we've had an extraordinary month of January. So that begs the question then, when stocks have had a really big January historically or a poor one, what has the rest of the year looked like? Is there any kind of trending? They even have the term they call, they say, the January effect. Well, what does that mean to investors potentially? So if you're still in the market, haven't changed your allocations, or right now in the month of January, like a great many people do, you're looking to perhaps restructure or rebalance your existing holdings. Maybe your 401k or your 403b at work. You're looking at, you got your year-end statements in probably in this last week or two. And you've been, you know, the company's saying, okay, do you want, this is your opportunity potentially to make changes. I've seen a number of different plans around the country year in and year out. Now, not all 401k company-sponsored plans or 403bs allow you to change at will randomly the allocations of your holdings. Sometimes they allow you to do it at certain times of the year. Of course, I would imagine the month, the very beginning of the year is one of those times. Now, so let's look at history anyway. As, and I've mentioned always that history does not guarantee historic performance doesn't guarantee future performance. But if you, you know, heard the adages such as, well, if we ignore history, then we are doomed or bound to repeat the mistakes of the past if we don't understand what they were. But by the same token, wonderful things that have happened in the past based upon certain public trends. If you see those public trends reoccurring here today in the future or the present, it doesn't necessarily mean that the wonderful result will be duplicated. You've got to understand that. But again, following the trends, understanding why they happen may help. The 10 best Januaries for the stock market have two things in common. The full year ended with a gain. So one of the things that did happen when you had great Januaries is that by the end of the year, you were still in positive territory. And there was also, at some point, a fairly significant market pullback or sell-off during the year. Now, that could be anywhere from just a 2 or 3 or 4% move, a pullback, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, or it could be a full-blown correction where you drop 10% or more, while at the end of the year, you still finish in positive territory. But you had to be invested. It doesn't matter what the market does if you're not in it, right? Stratagas, one of these companies that does historic studies and analytical studies of the markets, they studied the 10 biggest January gains for the S&P 500 going back to 1950. So that would give you about, what, almost 70 years of history to run from. And found that the advances ranged from 5.8%, and that was in 1980, to 13.2% in 1987. Now remember, 1987, what happened that year? The crash of 87, you remember that? In October? Well, isn't that amazing? Even with a crash during the year, the market still finished in positive territory, up 13.2. But you had to be in it, of course, for the entire year. Now, if the S&P 500, using this as a major indices to represent the market, if it ends the month where it is right now, it would be number 6 of the top 10 finishes, right in and around a 7% gain. Now, each of those very strong January performances that we're talking about led to a full year gain, averaging, oh, believe it or not, about 22.3%. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that will happen this year. I'm just letting you know that each of the strong January performances that we've discussed did lead to a full year gain, and the average, not every year, but the average was 22.3%. Wall Street strategists surveyed by CNBC do in fact expect the S&P to rise to about 3,000 by year end from its current level, about 2860. So that's another 140 points, right? Now, that's about another 4 or 5% from where we are. So that would mean if you started out the year and you were in the market, you had all of your money in the S&P 500 index, you could very easily finish the year up 10 or 11%. So in the top 10 January years, the old Wall Street adage, so goes January, so goes the year. That is, in fact, an average, an adage. It worked pretty well. But it did leave out the part about the correction that occurred. In each of those years, there was a sell-off. These are good years, right? But in each of them, there was a sell-off ranging from a low 4% decline to as much as a 34% decline in October of 1987. That was the crash of 87. I had just come into the industry a few years earlier, so it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. Now, the median loss in the intraday year sell-off was about 8.2%, and the average correction was about 11.8. So we're looking at years that finished pretty solidly in positive territory. If you look at the top January years, finishing, you know, the end of that year, we did see that. But in each of those, the top years for performance that did finish in solid with an average of 22.3%. But in those same years, there was an average market decline or a correction of about 11.8%. Just so you know. So I guess ultimately in the end, in order to have enjoyed a return above 20% in those years, you had to have the discipline not to sell out of the market when the market had a correction being a decline of at least 10% from the top. Because the average in the 10 best years, Again, the best years being at an average of 22.3%, the average based upon the January data we're looking at. You know, each of them had a correction of about 11, a little over 11. Now, after the month of January, the S&P had a positive 11 months from February the 1st to December the 31st in all of the top years except 1987. In 1987, the year of the crash, it did in fact lose 9.9% in that period and was up only 2% for the year, but was in fact up. Remember, I told you that the we're talking about averages for what the years did. The other 9 years did in fact average an 11-month gain, excluding the month of January. You got to keep that in place. Excluding the month of January, you had an 11-month gain averaging 13%. Now, you can remember, in 1987, the crash of 1987, you saw that 34% decline literally on a Black Monday and a Black Friday and a Black Monday, just a matter of days. So you had less than 3 months to recover from that. Yet the market recovered sufficiently from that point with what the market gained prior to October, from January through October, prior to the crash. And in the 3 months that followed the crash, there was enough activity to put you positively up about 2% for the year. But that's interesting that in a year like that, with a major event like the crash of 87, that an investor who was disciplined enough to leave the money alone and not react. And by the way, you're only going to do that if you felt that the allocation you were using was proper for who you are, based on the time frame that you're in and when in your life you're going to need the money. Now, I say it that way because I'm not assuming that all money that's invested by everyone is intended for retirement. But obviously, if you were in your 30s and 40s, and retirement's going to be in your mid-60s, you have plenty of time to justify your being disciplined. But in the end, make sure that the allocation that you're using as an investor is appropriate for you in the kind of broad economy that we're in at the time. That's why here on the Money Talk program, we talk not only about the markets, but we talk about the economy. We talk about individual behavior and what makes you and I different. A strong January typically does bode well for the rest of the year. But we shouldn't ignore the possibility of a correction. That's what history is telling us. You typically see some form of a pullback, but the end result is a typically strong full year performance, according to market historians and strategists. So you got to kind of keep that in perspective when you're looking at these numbers. It may well be, of course it is, the reason that I keep trying to stress when we discuss the history of the market, the way the market performs, that emotion has a far bigger impact. In other words, what you feel, how you feel, has a far bigger impact on your success as an investor than what you think. Now, that doesn't mean ignore thought. Do your homework. Do your research. Talk to people. Listen to the Money Talk program. Listen to other programs. Ask questions, especially if you're working with a financial advisor. Ask questions of your advisor. Your advisor should also be a teacher. In other words, should be teaching you and educating you about the very big decisions that either you're making based on their advice or that they're making on your behalf if you give them discretion to manage money. Again, there's a lot about those relationships that you have to understand up front before you commit your dollars to the relationship. Now, in the end, I think that it's a good idea so that you'll... education is not just about what can happen and how much money you can make. Education, when you're dealing with investment markets and the nature of investments, the unique nature of the changing investment environment, it's going to be as much about you as it is about the investment world. And understanding both the investment world and you as a participant in it is going to be critical, if not to your understanding of it, but certainly to your happiness as an investor. Folks, I'm going to take a quick break here on the Money Talk program. We've got another segment to go, and I'll be right back with more Money Talk right here on AM 790. I'm Don Sowa.
Sponsored by Tax Doctor. Owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Call the Tax Doctor to settle tax debt for less. 800-542-9112. 800-542-9112.
Mom, Dad, I'm in eighth grade now. That means those years of peer pressure are way behind me. From here on out, it's all about good grades and living up to your totally realistic expectations. Alcohol is probably the last thing on my mind. Like you said, I'm too young to drink. When I'm with my friends, all we talk about are current events and boy bands. We're definitely not curious about what alcohol tastes like or why the older kids drink. And do I notice when you have a drink at dinner?
Of course not. Just like I haven't noticed where you keep the alcohol.
Oh, and if the opportunity arises to talk to me about drinking, you should definitely continue to avoid it. And if you do bring it up, just remind me that I'm too young. That'll probably do the trick.
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the 8th grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Eric was way behind on his taxes.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS, almost $15,000. I tried to make payments.
The IRS wasn't satisfied with Eric's efforts, so they came after him full force.
They're coming to put a lien and a hold on all my income, my home, my car. I was just overwhelmed at what to do.
Then Eric called Optima Tax Relief.
When Optima Tax got involved, the calls would stop, the threats would stop. It was easy, like, 1, 2, 3.
Optima Tax Relief is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, and their team of expert tax professionals took care of Eric's problem.
I owe $15,000, and now my debt is clean. I don't owe anything.
Take Eric's advice.
If you have a tax problem, you need to call Optima Tax now.
Call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Back in town, I saw a Cadillac sign say, no money down.
No money down. Well, that's a good deal. I love that. In the investment world, you got to put somebody down, though, and you got to keep it in play if you want to make any money. Or if you've done a good job of it. By the way, there's nothing wrong with taking a little bit of profit once in a while. Jim Cramer, you know that crazy guy from CNBC, he may stylistically seem crazy, pulling up the sleeves and doing the whole thing, but he has this. Sometimes, if you listen closely, there's some extraordinary wisdom in some of the things he said. And he did say very few people have ever lost any money by taking a profit. Another thing that he has said, he says there's nothing wrong with actually holding some cash in your portfolio. So if you're one of those folks who here after 8 or 9 years as an investor since the last bear market, which was in 08, I mean, if you're one of those folks that has done very, very well over this period of time, I would never suggest to anyone that it's the time to sell. But it may be the time to leave your initial investment invested, especially if you invested in good quality individual assets or funds or ETFs, but take some of the profit off the table. And by the way, I know the next thing you say, well, then what am I going to do with, what should I do with that money? What Cramer said in an article just this past week was, well, there's nothing wrong with doing nothing. In other words, take the money off the table and just hold it in. Most portfolios will have a sweep account or a money market type account. Many of them, I talked to them, they'll explain it, but many of them are even FDIC insured. In other words, those accounts are held with banks that are federal banks. Now, granted, it's not usually helpful, depending upon you as an individual, to hold an inordinate amount of cash. But, you know, I would say, especially if you're close to retirement or already in retirement, there's nothing wrong with holding anything from, say, 10 or 15% right up to 30% in cash. Again, that's unique to you. But what it will do is, remember, somebody says, well, there's opportunity cost in holding cash. Yes, you're right. Because the money market account or the bank or wherever is not going to pay you much, if anything, for it. But first of all, understand that your intention is to hold it as cash for a very short period of time, an appropriate period of time based upon the time frame we're in and based upon your unique needs that you might have. But the other side of that argument is that it has opportunity value as well. Because if we do, in fact, get, after having an extraordinary month of January and an extraordinary year last year in 2017, there may be a market pullback of some sort. Now, it could be a full-blown correction of 10% or more. Or it could be a 6 or 7 or 8% pullback. If that should happen, and then the market bottoms a little bit and moves sideways, and we'll certainly be talking about what we think we see in normal and overall trends here on the Money Talk program. But if that sort of thing happens, then you're going to be sitting on, at that time, you're going to consider it a very valuable asset, because now you don't have to immediately sell anything. You don't have to make two major decisions. What do I sell to raise cash? And then what do I buy with it? You can focus your attention on the second, easier, and maybe more favorable discussion, which is, what do I want to buy? Now, stocks, as I said, were down today, which is a little bit unusual. The Dow Jones Industrial down about 0.6%. Now, we hadn't seen that kind of a decline in about 100 days. So, yeah, it was unusual. While this uptrend channel remains intact by most analysts, there is definitely some concern or anxiety in the air based upon the CBOE Volatility Index. But in the end, the Dow Jones was down about 0.7%. The S&P was down 0.7. So the market overall, whether you were in the tech sector or the Dow or the S&P, dropped almost about the same. The Russell 2000 was down about 0.6%. Treasury bonds weakened again, pushing as the value of the bond comes down, the yield itself goes up, and it went up to hit early 2014 highs of 2.7%. Now, this is a pretty big deal. A lot of people don't always pay a lot of attention to the bonds, but it's reflective of higher potential inflation expectations that sometimes may potentially threaten to undermine what they call the cheap money Goldilocks status quo global markets that we've been enjoying. Gold and crude oil did fall while the dollar enjoyed a rebound. So that's a little bit unusual, even though some of the fear being discussed during the course of the day was potential for rising inflation. But the assets that typically do well in an inflationary environment, such as energy, oil, commodities, and precious metals like gold, those things actually went down. Breadth was heavily negative, with decliners outpacing advancers about 4.4 to 1. That was on the New York Stock Exchange. GE, General Electric, was among the most active traders, also as was Twitter. Now, GE was down slightly up, but Twitter actually had a pretty good day. They gained about 3.8% amid a 16% trough-to-peak rise over the last couple of days. So Twitter's been rebounding. Paper stocks led the way with a 13% gain, with home builders, were laggards, which had been laggards, down about 3.1. Investors backed away amid a very busy week of catalysts that are out there. Apple had a tough day. It slipped about 2%, a little over 2%, amid some concerns about potential slowing iPhone demand, throwing a bit of a wet blanket on the entire market, Apple being such a big market cap in the overall market. On the economic front, the big news was a drop in the personal savings rate to 2.4% from 2.5%, despite some steady gains in personal income, falling to the lowest level since 2005 and suggesting lingering headwinds for shoppers despite a pretty strong job market. Now, some modest losses aside, the day's result was the worst performance for stocks in about 5 months, that's one day, but of course still a very good year. So you got to kind of let it sink in your mind. What does it all represent? What does it mean? And it's being driven by a combination of, say, some foreign exchange volatility, the value of currencies overseas, bond market weakness, a little bit of a rollover in some key momentum names like big winners, like the FANG stocks, especially Apple, as I mentioned, and volatility expectations continuing to move up a little bit. Just 18 trading days into the year through Friday, and the S&P 500 had already surpassed Wall Street's strategist targets. You realize that at the beginning of the other market, they were predicting 2854 for the S&P 500. It's already surpassed that. That was for the year-end numbers projected. They were thinking the S&P might be up 6 or 7. Well, we're already there. Only 5 out of the 15 strategists have a higher target than Friday's actual close. So that was kind of an interesting, I guess they got it wrong a little bit. Now, they've always said a lot of things can happen before the end of the year, and maybe they're right. And with Friday's gains, this bull market is now the second longest on record. Now, there are some flaws to be found. You have the breadth remains poor, with fewer than 55% of the issues on the New York Stock Exchange moving higher last Friday. Sentiment is part of that mix. The volatility index, as I mentioned, is also decoupled a little bit from its usual inverse correlation with stocks. So that's worth looking. Inflation is set to rise as crude oil zooms back, they think, to 2014 levels. Potential GDP to GDP gap closes. And the labor market grows a little bit tighter. So that could push salaries higher, create financial inflation. We'll be watching that all pretty closely. But above all, cash levels are low, with Bank of America noting customers' cash at around 10% versus a low of 11% back in 2007, while retail traders are now fully engaged. All indications suggest that this is what we call a terminal phase, where gains come rapidly as downside risk does come and rise. The last 3% pullback was in November of 2016, so we haven't seen a move of a 3% pullback since then. That beats the previous record that ended December of 1995, 370 days by a wide margin in terms of actual pullbacks. I would think that 2018 will offer a pullback. We'll be looking carefully to see how much that will be, possibly, and we'll try to anticipate what it can mean to you and I as investors. In the meantime, thanks for listening to tonight's program on AM 790. This is Money Talk. I'm Don Sowa. If you tune in tomorrow, it'll be the Money Talk Get Back to Basics program, and I believe my daughter, Donna Sowa Allard, will be here with us as well. So I look forward to seeing you then through the window as you drive by on the Wampanoag Trail. In the meantime, have a good night.
First off, you robots are a great addition to the accounting department.
But
your auditing and risk assessment skills are excellent.
But
it's official. Robots have entered the world of accounting, and certified management accountants have mastered the 11 most critical practice areas in business, which means they'll be the ones calling the shots.
Forecasting, outstanding.
But
please stop oiling yourself up in the lunchroom.
I knew there was a but. There's always a but.
The CMA certification. You've got to earn it. Visit CMAcertification.org for details.
For many businesses, hiring is tough. You want access to highly qualified candidates fast. And you don't want to sign a long-term contract or pay upfront fees. That's why you need Indeed.com, delivering six times more hires than any other job site, according to independent research. Indeed is